Hello and welcome to Vanguard Books, part of the Learning College Vanguard Audiobooks. I'm Alex Lender. I'm going to read and comment today on The International Jew, which is a series of documents compiled into a book by the people who worked for Henry Ford, the automaker. This was done in the early part of the 1900s. And you can find this permanently archived at vnnforum.com, which you're encouraged to join. If you like, follow me on Twitter at the Linder Files. This is one of the more significant books. Back before Aryans became cowed and pulled in their horns, they were willing to talk honestly and openly about what was going on in their country. And this was pretty much the apex of that. Jews came in after the 1880 period into the U.S. and began to take power, buy up the media, and do what they always do in every nation, suppress anyone opposed to them and smear and defame anyone who pointed out what they were up to. But the U.S. was still pure, honest, and honorable enough that it could produce men like Charles Lindbergh and the aforementioned Henry Ford, who would describe accurately what the Jews were up to. And that's what we're going to hear about today, and we're just going to do Chapter 2. It's not all that long. Angles of Jewish Influence. Now, this begins with an epigraph, Chapter 2, from the Sixth Protocol of the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, which is a book that, fictional or not, lays out the mentality that certainly appears to guide today's world as I speak to you in 2015, just as it guided the world back then in 1900 when it was first coming to light. Anyway, the quote, the epigraph to Chapter 2, Angles of Jewish Influence, is, we will, quote, we will force up wages, which, however, will be of no benefit to workers, for we at the same time will cause a rise in the prices of prime necessities, i.e. inflation, pretending that this is due to decline of agriculture and of cattle raising. We will also artfully and deeply undermine the sources of production by instilling in the workmen ideas of anarchy and encourage them in the use of alcohol, at the same time taking measures to drive all the intellectual forces of the Gentiles from the land. Remember Lenin's, we'll grind the bourgeois between the millstones of progressive taxation and inflation. There's echoes of that in this Sixth Protocol. And also the idea, like what the Jews did at Katyn Forest in Poland and blamed on the Nazis, was take 10,000 of the top leaders of Poland and kill them, mass slaughter them, and bury them. Decapitating the enemy is what Jews do. If they can't suppress it, suppression is one thing, but what they really want to do is decapitate it and then prevent it from ever reforming. So the Jews see the white race effectively as like a tree or a root that they're trying to kill off. So they chop it off and then they spray herbicides, as they like to make fun of whites as herbs, or allow the Negroes to prevent it from ever reforming or regrowing out of that stump the way trees often will. So the job of white education, which is what the Learning College, VNNforum.com, and the white nationalist cause generally are all about, is regrowing a white head that can offer the white community leadership back to a sovereign nation where the conditions white men need to thrive are known, publicly discussed, and protected. So, with that quote, we will take measures to drive all the intellectual forces of the Gentiles from the land. We are driving them back into the land. We are those intellectual forces at Learning College that the Jews want to dissipate. They want to make disappear. So, Chapter 2, Angles of Jewish Influence. The Jewish question exists wherever Jews appear, says Theodor Herzl, H-E-R-Z-L, because they bring it with them. They carry it with them like a microbe, like a disease agent that they spread. And what they call anti-Semitism, a negative name, is simply the natural reaction to them. Herzl, of course, the father of Zionism. The Jewish question exists wherever Jews appear, says Theodor Herzl, because they bring it with them. It is not their numbers that create the question, for there is in almost every country a larger number of other aliens than of Jews. It is not their much boasted ability, for it is now coming to be understood that give the Jew an equal start and hold him to the rules of the game, and he is not smarter than anyone else. Indeed, in one great class of Jews, the zeal is quenched when the opportunity for intrigue is removed. So remember all these people who say, oh, Jews won without firing a shot, they did it all legally. Henry Ford is saying, no, they win by cheating. They can't win within the rules, or at least not more than other races can win. They need to go outside the rules. So keep that in mind. The Jewish question is not the number of Jews who reside here, not in the Americans' jealousy of the Jews' success, which is one reason Jews like to put out there. Certainly not in any objection to the Jews' Mosaic religion. Well, if you know the Talmud, there might be a little of that. It is something else, and that something else is the fact of Jewish influence on the life of the country where Jews dwell. In the United States, it is the, and this is in italics, the Jewish influence in American life. That's what people object to. That the Jews exert an influence they themselves loudly proclaim. Remember, he's writing this around 1920, or his men are writing this around 1920. This was all published in the Dearborn Independent, Dearborn, Michigan, you know, Detroit in the auto industry. The Jews claim, indeed, that the fundamentals of the United States are Jewish and not Christian, and that the entire history of this country should be rewritten to make proper acknowledgement of the prior glory due to Judah. If the question of influence rested entirely on the Jewish claim, there would be no occasion for doubt. They claim it all. But it is kindness to hold them to the facts. It is also more clearly explanatory of the conditions of our country. So Jews are trying to take credit for everything from the creation of the U.S. when it's really successful. If they insist that they, quote, gave us our Bible, unquote, and, quote, gave us our God, and, quote, gave us our religion, as they do over and over again with nauseating superciliousness throughout all their polemic publications, not a single one of these claims is true, says Ford. They must not grow impatient and profane while we contemplate the list of the real influences they have set at work in American life. Jews will take credit for everything and blame for nothing. It is not only the Jewish people, but the Jewish idea, and the people only as vehicles of this idea, that is, the point at issue. In this investigation of the Jewish question, it is Jewish influence and the Jewish idea that are being discovered and defined. The Jews are propagandists. This was originally their mission. But they were to propagate the central tenet of their religion. This they failed to do. By failing in this, they, according to their own scriptures, failed everywhere. They are now without a mission of blessing. Few of their leaders even claim a spiritual mission. But the mission idea is still with them in a degenerate form. This would be Tikkun Olam, the idea that they're fixing the world. It represents the grossest materialism of the day. It has become a means of sordid acquisition instead of a channel of service. Subtitle, Labor and Jewry. Now we're going to have a bunch of subtitles where he's talking about, remember, his thing in this chapter is to discuss angles of Jewish influence. And you'll see that these are, if anything, even stronger today. One or two may have faded, but as other sectors of the economy and national life have risen in prominence, the Jews have pushed their influence from that direction as well. But, you know, it'll be mostly common to what we see today, just slightly different vein. First subtitle, Labor and Jewry. The essence of the Jewish idea in its influence on the labor world is the same as in all other departments. The destruction of real values in favor of fictitious values. Let's underline that. The destruction of real values in favor of fictitious values. Like sexual liberation is put as the real value, but that's the fictitious value, the real value of sexual continence. The Jewish philosophy of money is not to make money, but to get money. The distinction between these two is fundamental. That explains Jews being financiers instead of captains of industry, that is, they're shuffling papers and being middlemen and being money manipulators or stock swindlers, rather than people who are actually producing something that's needed as a good or service by other people. So he's making a distinction between making money and getting money. The distinction between these two is fundamental. That explains Jews being financiers instead of captains of industry. It is the difference between getting and making. The creative, constructive type of mind has an affection for the thing it is doing. The non-Jewish worker formerly chose the work he liked best. He did not change employment easily because there was a bond between him and the kind of work he had chosen. Nothing else was so attractive to him. He would rather draw a little less money and do what he liked to do than a little more and do what irked him. The maker is always thus influenced by his liking. Not so the getter. It doesn't matter what he does, so long as the income is satisfactory. He has no illusions, sentiments, or affectations or affections on the side of work. It is the Geld that counts. Geld is German Jew, Yiddish for money. He has no attachment for the things he makes, for he doesn't make any. He deals in the things which other men make and regards them solely on the side of their money-making value. So Henry Ford takes pride in developing a production process and producing a fine automobile for the first time and starting a whole industry. So there's pride in cars that he makes. He, Henry Ford, makes cars that, you know, are good things that working men can afford, and he pays working men well to produce those cars. And he takes pride in all that. Not just, of course, he earns money from it, and a lot of money, but he takes pride in what he's doing, and he's an Aryan in that way. And he's contrasting this with Jewish financiers and that whole mentality of getting money by any means possible, whether pimping or slaving or what have you, rather than productive, creative labor. He has no attachments for the things he makes, for he doesn't make any. He deals in the things which other men make and regards them solely on the side of their money-making value. The joy of creative labor is nothing to him, not even an intelligible saying. Now, previous to the advent of Jewish socialistic and subversive ideas, the predominant thought in the labor world was to make things and thus make money. There was a pride among mechanics. Men who made things were a sturdy, honest race because they dealt with ideas of skill and quality, and their very characters were formed by the satisfaction of having performed useful functions in society. They were makers, makers with a capital M, and society was solid so long as they were solid. Men made shoes as exhibitions of their skill. Farmers raised crops for the inherent love of their crops, not with reference to far-off money markets. Everywhere, the job was the main thing, and the rest was incidental. The only way to break down this strong safeguard of society, a creative laboring class of sturdy character, was to sow other ideas among it, and the most dangerous of all was the ideas sown was that which substituted get for make. With the required manipulation of the money and food markets, enough pressure could be brought to bear on the ultimate consumers to give point to the idea of get in quotes, and it was not long before the internal relations of American business were totally upset, with Jews at the head of the banking system, and Jews at the head of both the conservative and radical elements of the labor movement, and, most potent of all, the Jewish idea sowed through the minds of working men. What idea? The idea of get instead of make. So they've taken over labor, they've taken over banking, they've set up the IRS right before this is written, they've created the Federal Reserve. So they're getting the monetary system in line in order to be able to mulct people through inflation and higher taxation, just as Lenin is saying at this very same time over in Russia. And they're also sowing the popular culture and the working masses with this notion that it's not the work that matters, but the money that you get from it. And if you can get the money without doing the work or without doing good work, that's just as good. So they're sowing all this kind of radicalism, this nonsense, this anti-Aryan attitudes. The idea of get is a vicious antisocial and destructive idea when held alone. But when held in company with make, and as second in importance, so the getting is subordinated to the making, it is legitimate and constructive. It's legitimate to want a profit and to make a profit when you're doing something good and socially useful. As soon as a man or a class is inoculated with the strictly Jewish idea of getting, and getting is always in quotes in this stuff, getting mine, getting while the getting is good, honestly if you can, dishonestly if you must, but get it, all of which are notes of this treasonable philosophy, the very cement of human society loses its adhesiveness and begins to crumble. The great myth and fiction of money has been forced into the place of real things, and the second step of the drama can thus be opened up. And you'll see this often, I've mentioned this before, on Jewish-produced, Jewish-written sitcoms, where a character will say, like, I wouldn't do that, I would never do anything like that. And then the other character says, how about $50? He goes, when do you want it? That type of almost syllogistic, formulaic witticism always hints that anything can be undermined for money, and goys are instantly ready to sell out the members of their own kind for money. They implant that idea. Is another example of sort of the way that they sow a mentality that helps them into goyish society, that there is no loyalty to anything except money or sex drive. Jewish influence on the thought of the working men of the United States, as well as on the thought of business and professional men, has been bad, thoroughly bad. This is not manifested in a division between capital and labor, for there are no such separate elements. There is only the executive and operating departments of American business. So there is no capital and labor, there's just the executives and the operating section, the operations management and the executive. Or the operations and the executive. The real division is between the Jewish idea, capital J and I, of get, and the Anglo-Saxon idea of make. And at the present time, the Jewish idea has been successful enough to have caused an upset. All over the U.S., in many branches of trade, communist colleges are maintained, officered, and taught by Jews. So the Jews are infiltrating the trades, you know, the Jewish funding and the radicals for the Soviet Revolution came out of the Lower East Side of New York, where all these Jews were making, were involved in trades like dressmaking and such. And the Jewish financiers financed those radicals. So the Jewish radicalism and communism got its start in all these trades, these cottage industries and burgeoning larger industries that were developing back around 1900. And this milieu is in New York, where most of these Jew immigrants are that have come in from 1980 to 1900, and they're spreading around the world to combine with local native radicals in Russia and anywhere else that it looks like they can get the revolution going. All over the U.S., in many branches of trade, communist colleges are maintained, officered, and taught by Jews. These so-called colleges exist in Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, Rochester, Pittsburgh, New York, and Philadelphia, and other cities all in the east or northeastern portion of the Midwest, the whole intent being to put all American labor on a get basis, which must prove the economic damnation of the country. That is the end sought, as in Russia, because at this point there was still hope among the Jews that they could communize the U.S. Now, it was later, Mencken made the famous jibe that it will never work because the American consumer will choose the Ford over the Constitution every time, and capitalism is able to supply enough goods that there is no need for a revolution. Now, your average poor person has a flat-screen TV, a cell phone, and an obese stomach. So there's no incentive to go communist. Until Jews can show that the infiltration of foreign Jews and the Jewish idea of the American labor movement, Samuel Gompers and such, has made for the betterment in character and estate, in citizenship and economic statesmanship, the charge of being an alien, destructive, and treasonable influence will have to stand. So that's the end of the subtitle, Labor and Jewry. And the next, The Churches and Jewry. The last place the uninstructed observer would look for traces of Jewish influence is in the Christian church. Yet if he fails to look there, he will miss much. If the libraries of our theological seminaries were equipped with complete files of Jewish literary effort during recent decades, and if the theological students were required to read these Jewish utterances, there would be less silly talk and fewer easy marks for Jewish propaganda in the American pulpit. For the next 25 years, every theological seminary should support a chair for the study of modern Jewish influence and the protocols. Again, Henry Ford is publicly praising and advising people to use and read the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. So think about that when you hear how unserious it is. The fiction that the Jews are an Old Testament people faithful to the Mosaic law would then be exploded, and timid Christians would no longer superstitiously hesitate to speak the truth about them because of that sadly misinterpreted text, "I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee," which the idiot Zionist evangelical dispensationalist Christians following the Scofield Bible are still citing, really, truly, piggishly, stupidly, here 100 years after he wrote this, or 95 years after this was written. God's going to hurt us if we stand up to the Jews. God does bad things to people who dare to look at the Jews straight on. I may not be a smart man, but I do know that. You know, this Forrest Gump-level retardation that's so common through the Bible Belt is empowering the Jews, this bogus interpretation. There is a mission for the pulpit to liberate the church from what the New Testament scriptures call, quote, the fear of the Jews, unquote, or close quote. The pulpit has also the mission of liberating the church from the error that Judah and Israel are synonymous. The reading of the scriptures which confuse the tribe of Judah with Israel, and which interpret every mention of Israel as signifying the Jews, is at the root of more than one half of the confusion and the division traceable in Christian doctrinal statements. The Jews are not the chosen people. Again, that's Henry Ford saying this. The Jews are not the chosen people, though practically the entire church has succumbed to the propaganda which declares them to be so. The Jewish tinge of thought has of late years overspread many Christian statements. And again, he's saying this 100 years ago. They've already polluted the Christian church with their ideas and lies about themselves and other things. And the Christians are dully and duly repeating these from their pulpits and confusing the well-meaning idiots in their pews. The Jewish tinge of thought has of late years overspread many Christian statements, and the uninstructed clergy have proved more and more amenable to Jewish suggestion, let alone Jewish money. The flaccid condition of the church, so much deplored by spokesmen who had regard for her inner life, was brought about not by science, not by scholarship, not by the, quote, increase of light and learning, close quote, for none of these things are antagonistic even to incomplete statements of truth, but by Jewish-German higher criticism. And that was a movement in Germany to basically try to historically ground, or really research and historically ground, the Bible and the claims in it. The defenders of the faith have fought long and valiantly against the inroads made by the so-called higher criticism, but were sadly incapacitated in their defense because they did not see that its origin and purpose were Jewish. It was not Christian. It was not German, it was Jewish. It is perfectly in keeping with the Jewish World Program, again, all capitals, Jewish World Program. Henry Ford didn't get where he was by being blind to reality, asserted there was a Jewish World Program 95 years before, more or less, before I'm reading you these words. It is perfectly in keeping with the Jewish World Program that this destructive influence should be kept out under Jewish auspices, should be sent out under Jewish auspices, and it is perfectly in keeping with a non-Jewish trustfulness, a Germanic gullibility, to accept the thing without looking at its source. Take things at face value and you get lied to successfully. The church is now victim of a second attack against her in the rampant socialism and Sovietism that have been thrust upon her in the name of flabby and unmoral theories of brotherhood, and in an appeal to her fairness. The church has been made to believe that she is a forum for discussion and not a high place for annunciation. Jews have actually invaded, in person and in program, hundreds of American churches with their subversive and impossible social ideals. Again, you have a reminiscent there of a kind of a callback to the Winston Churchill article about demands for impossible equality. Notice the same adjective there: impossible social ideals, impossible equality that was driving the Jewish Bolsheviks in Russia, arrested development, malevolence. Impossible social ideas, almost a near echo, or a brother term used by Henry Ford. Jews have invaded in person and program hundreds of American churches with their subversive and impossible. Remember in the protocols, we will instruct the youth of the Goyim in doctrines we know to be false. Impossible. They know they're not only advocating something impossible, they know it's impossible. Invading American churches with their impossible social ideals, and at last become so cocksure of their domination of the situation that they were met with the inevitable check. Clergymen ought to know that 7/8 of the economic mush they speak from the pulpit is prepared by Jewish professors of political economy and revolutionary leaders. They should be informed that economic thought has been so completely Judaized by means of a deliberate and masterly plan of camouflaged propaganda that the mass thought of the crowd, which is the thought mostly echoed in popular pulpits and editorials, is more Jewish than Jewry itself holds. The Jew has got hold of the church in doctrine, in liberalism, so-called, and in the feverish and feeble sociological diversions of many classes. If there's any place where a straight study of the Jewish question should be made, it is in the modern church, which is unconsciously giving allegiance to a mass of Jewish propaganda. It is not reaction that is counseled here. It is progress along constructive paths, the paths of our forefathers, the Anglo-Saxons, who have to this day been the world builders, hyphenated, capitalized, world builders, the makers of cities and commerce and continents, and not the Jews, who have never been builders or pioneers, who have never peopled the wilderness, but who move in upon the labors of other men. They are not to be blamed for not being builders or pioneers, perhaps. They are to be blamed for claiming all the rights of pioneers. But even then, perhaps, their blame ought to not to be so great as the blame that rests upon the sons of the Anglo-Saxons for rejecting the straightforward building of their fathers and taking up with the doubtful ideas of Judah. And again, you'll find echoes of what he's talking about there in Henry Adams, the education of Henry Adams, who is part of the John Adams extended clan and family, generations down the line from the founder John Adams, and observing that American ideals have been overtaken by the pursuit of filthy lucre, which has involved teaming up with Jewish financiers and exactly spreading the getting it rather than making it mentality that Henry Ford is here bemoaning. You understand? So I'm trying to throw in little supplemental things that reinforce and interlock and interweave and see the same thing that Henry Ford is talking about. So understand, he is very far from the only one making this claim. You can find it. I highly recommend reading The Education of Henry Adams to see how a very intelligent scion and heir of the northern section of our founders saw the U.S. evolving in the second half of the 1800s. Next subtitle is Jewry in Schools and Colleges. Colleges are being constantly invaded by the Jewish idea. The sons of the Anglo-Saxons are being attacked in their very heredity. The sons of the builders, the makers, are being subverted to the philosophy of the destroyers. Young men in the first exhilarating months of intellectual freedom are being seized with promissory doctrines, the source and consequences of which they do not see. Yeah, that is exactly right. They go in, and that's when you have energy and youth and interest, and you're hearing this stuff, and the first really intelligent person they meet might be some Jew who's always a leftist, who encourages them to hate their own and teaches them that's a higher morality, and most of them fall for it. The source and consequences of these nostrums they do not see. There is a natural rebelliousness of youth, which promises progress. There is a natural venturesomeness to play free with ancient faith, both of which are ebullitions of the spirit and significance of dawning mental virility. You know, they're young and strong, and they want to feel they're the first ones remaking the world, the first ones who ever thought these ideas. And he's saying that impulse, which is natural but can easily be mischanneled and is professionally mischanneled by Jews into supporting whatever their cause du jour is or cause du decade is, like promoting homosexuality and sexual deviance in order to break down society, as that's how it's been for a long time now. It is during the periods when these adolescent expansions are in process that the youth is captured by the influences which deliberately lie in wait for him at colleges. True, in after years, a large proportion come back to their senses sufficiently to be able to, quote, to sit on the fence and see themselves go by. That is, they can see themselves in the context, whereas they can't when they're 20 or 18. And thus they come back to their sanity. They find that, quote, free love doctrines make exhilarating club topics, but that the family, the old-fashioned loyalty of one man and one woman to each other and their children, is the basis not only of society, but of all personal character and progress. They find that revolution, while a delightful subject for fiery debates and an excellent stimulant to the feelings of Superman-likeness, is nevertheless not the process of progress. The trouble with the colleges has progressed along precisely the same lines that have been described in connection with the churches. So as the Jews have suborned the churches, so they've subverted the colleges. First, Jewish higher criticism in the destruction of young men's sense of respect for the ancient foundations and for their own ancestors. Second, Jewish revolutionary social doctrines. The two always go together, so they cannot live apart. They are the fulfillment of the protocol's program to split non-Jewish society by means of ideas. To split non-Jewish society. We're going to destroy the Goyim by separating their society into all these competing, conflicting, fractious isms. Okay, so destroy their sense of respect for ancient foundations, one, and two, revolutionary social doctrines. Destroy the old faith and replace it with something new. It is idle to attack the quote-unquote radicalism of college students. These are the qualities of immaturity. But it is not idle to show that social radicalism being a very good word, very sadly misused, as it means getting to the root of things, comes from a Jewish source. The central group of red philosophers in every university is a Jewish group with often enough a Gentile front, quote-unquote, in the shape of a deluded professor, just as they use people like Bush to hide the fact that it's really a Mossad, a neocon Trotskyite, who are writing the speeches, the plans, coming up with the words and the ideas and the plans and the agenda items. They'd like to put a goy front on it to fool the goyim, and also just in case everything goes to hell, which they can blame it all like WCTC demolitions on Bush. Now, let's see. The central group of red philosophers in every university is a Jewish group. Just as we saw in the 60s radicalism, it would be a just Well, what's the University of Wisconsin? That's just a Cal State College, but the radicals there are Jews. The ringleaders are Jews. Same thing Ann Arbor. That's just out in Michigan. Well, the ringleaders there are Jews. Just the same as on the coast at Columbia or at Berkeley. May find an occasional, Irish Catholic like Tom Hayden or some other, Jane Fonda, but the leaders of them are Jews. But they'll get a Gentile front in the shape of a deluded professor, says Ford. Some of these professors are in the pay of outside red organizations, red meaning communist. There are intercollegiate socialist societies swarming with Jews and Jewish influences and toting Jewish professors around the country, addressing fraternities under the patronage of the best civic and university auspices. So this again is the Jew Zelensky parts in the noble Aryan Callahan box, to draw from Tommy Boy. So all these existing old Aryan clubs with noble ideas and honestly representation, the Jews, like cancer cells spreading from, the lymph nodes to the lungs or the pancreas or whatever, are spreading their bad doctrines under cover of Aryan society, under cover of Aryanism. The Aryans provide them a front and a podium, a lectern, and an amplification, and they're using it to destroy Aryan society, coming into our country like cancer cells. Even had Freud saying in so many words, he came bearing the plague to America. And that's the microcosm, a microbe-cosm of what his race does generally, not just in psychology. And so, there are intercollegiate socialist societies swarming with Jews and toting Jewish professors around the country, addressing fraternities under the patronage of the best civic and university auspices. Student lecture courses are fine pasture for this propaganda, the purpose being to give the students the thrill of believing they are taking part in the beginning of a new movement comparable to the winning of independence. That's exactly right. But 100 years later, it would be comparable to the what Jews call civil rights movement. So they say to the young 19-year-old white kid, okay, you may have missed this great civil rights movement to empower blacks and the wonderful progressive unfolding of social justice in this country, but you still have time to hop on the bandwagon for the queers. The queer movement is what's the train that's running now. Get on that. Woo, woo. And thus you have a Truman State. You have Matthew Shepard, dead HIV-positive cruiser, gay cruiser, killed in a drug deal that was called a hate crime. You have his mom touring around to places like where I am, Truman State in Kirksville, Missouri, speaking to a standing room only crowd that's constantly interrupting her with applause, like she was Netanyahu speaking to Congress. And this is how goys are duped and suckered. They don't think hard enough. They accept things at face value. And unlike Ford, I would say that their religion is part of what causes them to be that way. Their religion is, Christian religion is a superstructure built on their Germanic genetic gullibility, which is something we need to understand about ourselves and synthesize a defense for. Or an improvement on. Promise to give students the thrill of believing they are taking part in the beginning of a new great movement comparable to the winning of independence, is how they would put it back then. The revolutionary forces which head up in Jewry rely very heavily on the respectability which is given their movement by the adhesion of students and a few professors. It was so in Russia. Everyone knows what the name student eventually came to signify in that country. A bomb thrower. The Jewish Chautauqua, that was the educational movement that came out of the crazy Protestants in the burned over district of Western New York in the 1800s. And they would go around, you know, having tent revivals and teaching people and selling stuff and ideas, new forms of Christianity in the 1800s. The Jewish Chautauqua is the name of a city in that area of New York, which works almost exclusively in colleges and universities. Educational tent revival mission, the Jewish Chautauqua, he's comparing it to, together with Bolshevism in art, science, religion, economics, and sociology, are driving straight through the Anglo-Saxon traditions and landmarks of our race of students. These are ably assisted by professors and clergymen whose thinking has been dislocated and poisoned by Jewish subversive influences in theology and sociology. Next subtitle, What to Do About It? Simply identify the source and nature of the influence which has overrun our schools and universities. Let the students know that their choice is between the Anglo-Saxons and the tribe of Judah. Now that's what I call today Team White, hashtag versus Team Jew. That's what we want to polarize the public into, not just college students, but make them understand the true forces doing battle are whites, if they had representation, for they are surely attacked as a group, and Jews, who are the leader of the enemy, the main enemy, the director of the enemy, the agenda setter of the enemy, the term concoctor, the term popularizer, the term enforcer, homophobia and such, anti-Semitism and such, racism and such, creator of all the imaginary problems in the world, and fomenter of all the actual problems. Team White versus Team Jew, and here we see Henry Ford saying this 100 years ago. Simply identify what to do about these angles of Jewish influence we've been talking about. Simply identify the source and nature of the influence which has overrun our schools and universities. And he doesn't say talk in code or come up with some clever coded, cowardly conservative response. Call the things what they are. Doesn't that seem like wisdom to you? Doesn't that correspond to what's in your Aryan soul? Calling things what they are. I mean, Christ, even Confucius, you know, Chinese sage supposedly said that the beginning of all breakdown and misery and confusion begins when we stop calling things by their actual name. Call things by their right name. If it's an Amish person who's buying up all the media and promoting degenerate sex, and by God, you call him an Amish. But on the off chance it's not an Amishman doing that, or a Mennonite, or a Mormon, then you call him whatever he is. Let the students know that their choice is between the Anglo-Saxon and the tribe of Judah. Let the students decide, in making up their allegiance, whether they will follow the builders or those who seek to tear down. And we know the Jews praise themselves as destroyers of barriers, wreckers of nations, category crossers. They're always praising themselves. We break everything down. We show that other men's gods are false idols. It is not a case for argument. The only absolute antidote to the Jewish influence is to call college students back to a pride of race. Racial pride offers the only effective way out of the various funhouse options that are all controlled by and backed by Jews. There's one door that leads to white awakening, white progress, and white pride, and that's the white racial door where the Jews are excluded. They're not part of it. And the rest are all fake options offered by the Jew. We often speak of the fathers, capital F, as if they were the few who happened to affix their signatures to a great document which marked in a new era of liberty. The fathers of our nation were the men of the Anglo-Saxon Celtic race, the men who came from Europe with civilization in their blood and in their destiny, the men who crossed the Atlantic and set up civilization on a bleak and rock-bound coast, the men who drove north to Alaska and west to California, the men who opened up the tropics and subdued the Arctics, the men who mastered the African veldt, the men who peopled Australia and seized the gates of the world at Suez, Gibraltar, and Panama.
Men who have given form to every government and a livelihood to every people and an ideal to every century. They got neither their God nor their religion from Judah, nor yet their speech nor their creative genius. They are the ruling people. Chosen throughout the centuries to master the world by building it ever better and better, and not by breaking it down.
10 Ford on the Anglo-Saxon Celtic race that has created the world.
Into the camp of this race, among the sons of the rulers, comes a people that has no civilization to point to, no aspiring religion, no universal speech, no great achievement in any realm but the realm of Get. Cast out of every land that gave them hospitality, and these people endeavor to tell the sons of Saxons what is needed to make the world what it ought to be. If our sons follow this counsel of dark rebellion and destruction, it is because they do not know whose sons they are, of what race they are the scions. Let there be free speech to the limit in our universities and free intercourse of ideas, but let Jewish thoughts be labeled Jewish, and let our sons know the racial secret.
And now today we have the canting Judeo-Christian, etc. He's saying, call a Jew a Jew. Name the enemy. There we have it. Page 31, as we near the end of chapter 2. Name the enemy is the last subtitle in the chapter. The warning has already gone out through the colleges. The system of Jewish procedure is already fully known. How simple it is. First, you secularize the public schools. Secularize is the precise word the Jews use for the process. You prepare the mind of the public school child by enforcing the rule that no mention shall ever be made to indicate that culture or patriotism is in any way connected with the deeper principles of the Anglo-Saxon religion. Keep it out, every sight and sound of it. Keep out also every word that will aid any child to identify the Jewish race. Then, when you have thus prepared the soil, you can go into the universities and colleges and enter upon the double program of pouring contempt at all the Anglo-Saxon landmarks, at the same time filling the void with Jewish revolutionary ideas. You see, public schooling is inherently anti-white because it can be used in that way by whoever controls it. Whereas if it's broken down and decentralized and people get whatever learning they feel like, then you don't have one thing controlling that can force its agenda into all their heads. The influence of the common people is driven out of the schools where common people's influence can go, but Jewish influence is allowed to run rampant in the higher institutions where the common people's influence cannot go. And again, this is decades before the creation of the Department of Education and the federal control of all colleges through the student loans, and then under LBJ, they're getting involved with the K-12, even at the federal level, and they're dictating the content of school textbooks out of Washington. So that's how centralized statism and a giant bureaucracy allows a tiny number of Jews to leverage political control over hundreds of millions of people spread out over a continent. That's why I say that centralization is inherently Jewish and decentralization is inherently white. If you have decentralized, then the Jews have to run into every little town and hamlet and try to impose their will. But when you have all the rights and powers vested in Washington, this gigantic state, then it makes it much easier for them to control. And he said, so they're prepping these kids, they're deracinating them, they're depriving them of their roots by denying all knowledge of their own religion and their racial background, separating that from anything they're taught, teaching them never mentioning Jew, never talking about any kind of racial struggle. And then when they get to college, they can be exposed to the more radical Jewish revolutionary program. And then he, continuing from that point, he says, this is the liberalism, quote-unquote, which Jewish spokesmen so much applaud. In labor unions, in churches, in universities, it has tainted the principles of work, faith, and society. The proof of it is written thickly all over Jewish activities and utterances. It is in exerting these very influences that Jewry convinces itself that it is fulfilling its mission to the world. Tikkun Olam, fixing the world by destroying it.
Jews are basically best seen as sort of a photo negative of whatever is good. Whatever is white in our world and black is black and white is reversed in their world. The capitalism attacked is non-Jewish capitalism. The orthodoxy attacked is Christian orthodoxy. The society attacked is Anglo-Saxon form of society, all of which by their destruction would redound to the glory of Judaism. See, he says it plainly, Jews, Judaism, he uses the words repeatedly. Nowadays, people are even afraid to use those words. The list could be extended. The influence of the Jewish ideas on Anglo-Saxon sports and pleasure. Again, decades before ESPN glorifying black athletes and denouncing whites. On the Anglo-Saxon idea of patriotism, which has been co-opted to that I just saw as I'm reading this in recent days, a poll that said that the majority of either Americans or conservative Americans would side with Israel if her interests conflicted with those of the U.S. So they literally, they have reformed conservative patriotism to mean supporting a foreign country and a foreign race, a foreign people above your own. And these fools, these patriotards, think they're patriotic. So much have the Jews warped the minds of the common folk by buying their leaders, the Ann Coulters and the Rush Limbaughs that you see on TV, the Sean Hannitys and the Bill O'Reillys, all bought by the Jews, push their line. Disagree over trivial stuff, but agree, or give it more properly put, give in on the essential stuff of race and culture. On the Anglo, and continuing the list of things Jews have subverted, on the Anglo, that he's not going into in depth, but could, the Anglo-Saxon conception of the learned professions, you know, turning them from genuine erudition and knowledge of real subjects into politics masquerading as academic disciplines. And again, this is decades before the creation of black studies and Chicano studies and whiteness studies and other bogus stuff. But they were perverting back then education, teaching, and anthropology and creating Marxist disciplines that are really political things like sociology. The influence of the Jewish idea runs down through every department of life. Well, one very badly deluded American editor wrapped up in Jewish advertising contracts was heard to say, if the Jews can get away with it, then they have a right to. It is a variant of the answer of Jewish origin, which runs thus, how can a paltry 3 million run the 100 million of the rest of us? Nonsense. And we hear that same non-argument today. How can 2% rule 200 million? Yes, let it be agreed. If the Jewish idea is the stronger, if the Jewish ability is the greater, let them conquer. Let Anglo-Saxon principles and power go down in ruins before the tribe of Judah. But first let the two ideas struggle under their own banners. Let it be a fair struggle. Well, I would say that, don't worry about the fair part, but yeah, the way that the Jews triumph is by cowing us out of speaking the real truth, not only about who's doing battle, but being even afraid to name our enemy. So even though we're prating about anti-whites, but our enemy is the Jew. The Jew is the creator and the director of the anti-whites. Those anti-whites who are white, who aren't Jewish, wouldn't exist were it not for the Jews, so it's better to say Jews than anti-whites. And yet we keep the Jews successfully divide us into fake divisions, liberal, conservative. Now those do reflect real ideas, but they are not the main battle going on. And so it's up to us white nationalists, racialists, to explain to people that, look, it's our team, Team White, doing battle with Jews, and to rip out and destroy and burn off the conservative underbrush that's confusing people. There's always new, alt-conservative, NRX, neo-reactionary stuff, alt-right, we are not our grandfather's conservative. It's always popping up with new people trying to combine radicalism and respectability, and that does not work. You have to either be a cowardly respectable, or you have to be a genuine, serious radical. And I urge you to choose the latter and join Team White. Help us form Team White as we work on the soft side here with education and expounding true knowledge that you can share and put in your own terms and tell to the people you know in your life. And you will know how to adapt what I'm saying and what I'm giving you from the people that I'm reading into the form that makes the most sense for the people that you're talking to, given their age and their background and their learning and their station in life. The same idea can be explained to everyone, young or old, dumb or smart, rich or poor. It's just a matter of putting it correctly. Says Ford, it is not a fair fight when in the movies, in the schools, in the Judaized churches, in the universities, the Anglo-Saxon idea is kept away from the Anglo-Saxons on the plea that it is sectarian or clannish or obsolete, all those in quotes, or something else, say reaction. It is not a fair fight when Jewish ideas are offered as Anglo-Saxon ideas, the Zelensky ideas in the Callahan box, because offered under Anglo-Saxon auspices, and that's like Rush Limbaugh preaching, you know, endless wars for Israel, or Sean Hannity saying race doesn't matter in the recent three black rape of a white girl down at Spring Break. Those are Jewish ideas put behind attractive Irish Catholic or German Protestant faces in order to fool the mass of the people who belong to the same demographic group. Well, Sean Hannity is one of my own. I'm Irish Catholic. Rush Limbaugh is one of my own. I'm a Missouri German Protestant. He wouldn't lie to me. He looks like me. He seems to think like me. But beware, the Jews slide in their Jewish ideas, their anti-white ideas, their anti-Irish Catholic, anti-German Protestant ideas behind the facade of an attractive goy face, female or male, in order to fool the child, as Dr. Seuss put it. And his fib fooled the child, and he patted her head, and he got her some water and sent her to bed. And when Cindy Lou Who was in bed with her cup, he crept to the chimney and stuffed the tree up. The tree he stuffed up is white culture, white jeans, white everything, and he's stealing it from us while lying to us, patting us on the head and telling the little naive Cindy Lou Who white race, oh, everything will be just fine. It's okay. Diversity is a good thing. In fact, it's our greatest strength, said the Jew Grinch. Now, are you going to be docile enough? Are you going to be childish enough? Are you going to be Christian enough to accept that? If so, then you deserve. You and your kind deserve to go extinct. God loves extinction. Nature loves extinction. 99.9% of the species that ever existed upon the face of the earth are today, as I speak to you, extinct. So whether you're religious or not, extinction is clearly part of God's plan or nature's plan. It is not a fair fight when Jewish ideas are offered as Anglo-Saxon ideas because offered under Anglo-Saxon auspices. Let the heritage of our Anglo-Saxon fathers have free course among their Anglo-Saxon sons, and the Jewish idea can never triumph over it, in the university forum or in the marts of trade. The Jewish idea never triumphs until the first people over whom it triumphs are denied the nurture of their native culture. Judah has begun the struggle. Judah has made the invasion. Let it come. Let no man fear it. But let every man insist that the fight be fair. Then you have the Anglo-Saxon preoccupation with fairness, but the Jews don't fight fair. They can't fight fair because they aren't the majority. They're a tiny minority with views hostile. He's right. If it is a fair fight, the Jews will lose. But guess what? They're not going to fight fair. They can't fight fair, and they know that. And that's why they don't. And calls to them to fight fair are wasted. Let college students and leaders of thought know that the objective is the regnancy of the ideas and the race that have built all the civilization we see and that promises all the civilization of the future. Let them know also that the attacking force is Jewish. White people, you, Anglo-Saxon white race, built everything. Civilization is yours now and in the future, and Jews are the ones trying to destroy it. Don't let them lie to you about what they're doing, what they are, what they intend. Pick your side over theirs. Last paragraph. That is all that will be necessary, says Ford, quite incorrectly. It is against this that the Jews protest. Quote, you must not identify us, unquote, they say. You must not use the term Jew. Why? Because unless the Jewish idea can creep in under the assumption of other than Jewish origin, it is doomed. Let's read that again. I didn't quite tone that right. Because unless the Jewish idea can creep in under the assumption of other than Jewish origin, unless they can get that Zelensky idea in the Callahan book, right? Then Jews are doomed. If they have to travel under their own name, they will be seen for the shoddy, hostile, alien, foreign parasite they are. So make them live under their own moniker. Call them a Jew. That's what they shrink from. And remember, Ford is saying exactly what Joe Goebbels said over in Germany. And the Germans actually carried out what Ford is talking about. They forced the Jew to fight as Jew, and the Jew lost to the Aryans. But the Jew lost to Team White in Germany. They didn't lose to a bunch of conservative Germans speaking in codes, being fearful and protecting their bourgeois income. They lost to German radicals who weren't afraid to say the public divides into Team White and Team Jew, and Team Germany is effectively Team White. And if you have the courage and the willingness to withstand the onslaught the Jews can provide, then we can beat them. But you can't beat them with codes and cleverness and slickness, because they are cleverer and slicker than we are. And even if they were a little less clever and slick than we are, they are still better positioned today in 2015 than we are. So there is no short way around the barn. There's a long way around the barn is the shortest way to go. Call the Jew what they are, face the north wind directly, and then you can begin to cut through it, cold as it is. There's no way out but through the Jew, as a wise man once said. And that remains as true today as when he said it. You must not identify us, they say. You must not use the term Jew. Why? Because unless the Jewish idea can creep in under the assumption of other than Jewish origin, i.e. it's not Zelensky, it's Callahan, it is doomed. If the Jews say, well, we're opening your border to change the racial makeup of America, to make it anti-white and much more Jew-friendly, you'll say, well, that's not good for me. Yeah, you're right, it's not good for me, but it's good for us Jews. Well, aren't you like a 2% minority? Yeah, but why shouldn't our conditions prevail? Instead of, well, we're like the 98% majority. We prefer to live as we live. We don't want the third world coming in here. Well, it doesn't matter. We're going to do what's good for Jews. See, they can't sell it like that. They have to sell it as a lie. And the lies they choose are, if you oppose their plan, you're racist. They demonize those opposed. And they lie about the positives of what they want. So they lie on both sides of the coin. They lie that you're evil if you resist them, i.e. you prefer your own interests to theirs. And they lie about the good that is involved with their plan, that diversity is somehow a good thing, that we're somehow being enriched by Mexicans with brain-burning parasites and multiple drug-resistant tuberculosis coming over the border from Mexico. So on all fronts, in all quarters, Jews lie, and always they don't like being called Jews because they feel they've been found out. They feel they are very different from Aryans, and Aryans have to be trained to recognize how different Jews are, but once they do, it's quite effective. You say, well, you're a Jew. You're pushing your Jewish agenda. Your Jewish agenda is anti-white. So why would I support it? This is real politics. This is how real politics would be waged if we had people who would wage it. We do have some. They are growing, but they are mainly on the internet. But this is the route it has to go to get back to achieving white sovereignty again and becoming masters of our own civilization. Just to finish it out. Anglo-Saxon ideas dare proclaim themselves in their origin. A proper proclamation is all that is necessary today. Compel every invading idea to run up its flag. But you see, it's a worse position, and that ends the chapter. That it's a worse position we find ourselves in today. Because now they're steady. I spent all last night trolling on white privilege, anyone who was promoting that concept. they start to take aspects of white personality, white culture, white race, white appearance. Anything they can latch onto becomes a handle to grab and punch whites in the face. And they don't just find real stuff, they invent stuff. Or they take what is actually good and misrepresent it as bad to humiliate and inflict wounds in order to eventually dispossess us of our civilization and the material goods that we've created. And they've so dog-trained whites that half of them go along with this destruction and this racial humiliation of their own kind. So this is the situation we are in a scant 100 years after Henry Ford proclaimed that all we had to do was name the Jew and expose that the Jews were doing this and our Anglo-Saxon ideas would triumph, but it proves not to be enough. We have to organize against the Jew, but yes, we do need to name him, but we do need to now form a team against him under worse circumstances in order to defeat the Jew that is destroying our society. So it's quite a tall order. But that's all right. As Ford said, whites have done every incredible thing that has been done in the past, and they're going to do a lot more incredible things in the future. And the first incredible thing they're going to do is liberate themselves and really all humanity from the Jew. That's why we're doing these shows at the Learning College. That's why I'm talking to you. And I will be with you. I want to thank you for listening. You can follow me at the Linter Files if you want to read some fun, aggressive, intelligent stuff. And that's on Twitter. And I will be back with you again. I want to thank you for listening today. I'll be back with you again real soon.